Climbing Gold is a production of Duct Tape and Beer, with support from The North Face, Never Stop Exploring, Dr. Squatch, Get Dirty, Stay Clean, Chorus, Explore Perfection, and Element, Restoring Health Through Hydration.
So Alex, hypothetical question for you. If I were to say, hey, my buddy bailed. I've got a spare spot on an expedition to Everest. You've got the next 5 weeks totally free. There's no like crazy conflicts in your life. The trip is totally on me. So clearly this is like a hypothetical. Would you go? Would you say yes to going and climbing Everest?
Yeah, I probably would. And actually, I've said this many times over the years that if somebody offered a free trip, I'd probably go. I mean, I've never been to Nepal. Just the cultural experience, just the travel. I mean, if it's a free trip, you kind of always have to say yes. I mean, I feel like a big part of life is just saying yes to cool opportunities and learning along the way. So I would probably say yes, even though I'm not really interested in high altitude mountaineering.
Has there been a point in your life where Everest ever captured your imagination? Like, were you in high school reading Into Thin Air and thinking to yourself, well, maybe one day?
Yeah, it's funny you say that because actually I did have to read Into Thin Air in high school. And, you know, at the time I was already a really serious gym climber. And reading Into Thin Air definitely did not capture my imagination in the same way that gym climbing was. You know, it's like, it felt like a completely different world. It wasn't like I read Into Thin Air and was like, I should do that someday. You know, I read it and was just like, well, this is better than reading, A Farewell to Arms or something. But this is not my world. Like, this is insane.
Sometimes in our rock climbing community or sort of high-end alpinism community, there can be this, I'm so over Everest attitude, right? How do you feel about it?
You know, I'm sort of turned off by the crowds in the same way that anybody else is. But at the end of the day, it's still the tallest mountain in the world. And so there's obviously an appeal to climbing the tallest mountain in the world. You know, I mean, it's just cool to get to the top, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think I may be less curmudgeonly or sort of elitist about that stuff as some other climbers, certainly some of my friends. You know, I'm kind of like, I mean, I understand the appeal. I see why people do it.
So who are we talking to today?
So today we're talking to three members of the Full Circle Everest Expedition. We're talking to Phil Henderson, Adina Scott, and Eddie Taylor. Last year, the Full Circle Expedition made history by becoming the first all-black expedition to summit Mount Everest.
It was a journey years in the making that required a deep commitment, vision, and teamwork, even before a single member set foot on the mountain. And what happened on the mountain may very well ripple outward to change our sport and community.
I'm Alex Honnold.
I'm Fitz Cahal.
This is Climbing Gold.
I mean, the first climbing wall I ever been on artificial was a highway underpass that someone had drilled holes into it. That was probably like 1989 or something like that. I played football and I fractured a vertebrae in my neck when I was 21, I think. So there was a 4-year period of time between that injury when I was paralyzed from the neck down for a number of minutes and I was on disability for the next year. And through that year, I said, what am I going to do with my life? Well, I'm going to do anything I want because life is short. You can be different tomorrow. Within an hour, what you could do yesterday, you can't do. Sounds very much like the pandemic, right? Like everyone's life, it's like uplifted. Well, I went through that when I was 21. Over the next 4 years, I was like, what am I going to do? When I found out about Knowles, I was like, this is what I'm going to do. And I took a course and I've been working in the outdoors ever since then. Yeah. I've worked in the outdoor industry for a very long time and just recently became self-employed, I guess you can say, doing what I love to do, still just helping people get outside and so on. It's a long, long, long piece of life, but yeah. Yeah, my name's Philip Henderson. From San Diego, California. I reside now in Cortez, Colorado. You know, when I came into the industry, there were no people who looked like me. I didn't, not only that, but I didn't know anybody in the industry because I wasn't connected to it. That was back in the early 90s, 1990, 92. I took a Knowles course in 92. And I didn't know anybody or anything about the outdoor industry. And so I remember that. And I always wanted to be that, not wanted to be, but I saw myself as that person for other people, which for me was a full circle. It was like people would ask me, what do you do? And I would show them, I'd take them climbing, we'd go boating, we'd go hiking or something like that. And so I was that person that was an entry for other people. And that's kind of where Full Circle came about. When we were putting this expedition together, we were looking for a name for the expedition. And I explained that to the team and we decided to adopt the name Full Circle.
As you were saying that, it occurred to me that we are recording a podcast, and I was like, you know, nobody knows what you look like. But I was like, well, you're a black man with dreads and a stately looking white beard. So, you know, so yeah, I was like, I feel like we need a, you know, and you're like, when people look like me and they're like, well, he has a soothing voice and sounds really nice. Like there are a lot of people that sound nice outdoors.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's something that, again, when people don't see something, you know, it can throw them for a loop. And I've had that happen many, many times. I walk in the door, they don't expect to see me. Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. And so talk about the process for putting together the full Circle Everest team, and like, how did that come together?
I was in Ouray, Colorado. I was teaching a clinic, an ice clinic in the backcountry. And I turned around and I saw Fred Campbell. And I'd never seen Fred before. I'd never seen another black person out in the backcountry climbing before if they weren't with me. And that only happened once, actually, in my life. And so I turned around and Fred was just standing there. I was like, yo. And we, you know, we just greeted each other. And I was like, yeah, you know, he said, my name's Fred. And I said, my name's Philip. And he said, Henderson. He knew who I was. And I said, how did you know? Well, he had been climbing with Conrad for the last 3 years while I was living in Patagonia in Chile. And so we kind of exchanged greetings and so on. We talked a little bit. And I turned around and I noticed, I was, you know, looking at my students, I noticed something out of the corner of my eye. I turned back around and there's Manoa.
They're talking about climber Manoa Anu'u.
So Fred and Manoa were actually climbing together. And so Fred asked me, he said, man, have you talked with Conrad? Because he's something about Everest. And Conrad had been sending me emails to an email that I didn't have anymore because I didn't work at Knowles anymore. And that was the day that the expedition literally started. And we talked. And then it was like, okay, it's on. I want to start putting the team together. Who else do I know that would be a good team member? And it was, we wanted to be gender neutral and finding black women with mountaineering skills and experience was very hard. But I knew of two, Rosemary and Adina.
Okay, my name is Adina Scott. My day job these days is doing science support on research vessels in Antarctica for the U.S. Antarctic program. So I go down to the ice and run the computers and gadgets for scientists who are doing all kinds of work down there.
Wait, does that count as a day job?
Yeah, it's a total day job.
day job is like doing IT at Microsoft or something, like freaking going to Antarctica on research vessels. This is not a day job.
I have to do IT while I'm on the research vessel, so it totally counts as a day job.
Huh.
Anytime you have to do IT, no matter where you are, it's a day job.
Including Everest Base Camp?
Still
a day job.
Sure, why not?
You have quite a day job.
I knew what Adina did for work. I knew what she brought to the table in terms of, you know, having been on Denali and living in the Northwest and skiing and so on. And so I approached her as well. Almost the next year, almost to the date, I was in Ouray, Colorado at the hotel. I had my dog in the dog park. I turn around and Eddie's standing there, another black man with dreadlocks, middle of wintertime.
Hi, I'm Eddie Taylor. I live in Lafayette, Colorado. Been climbing for about 12 years, and I'm a high school teacher and track and field coach. I was at the dog park, actually, and Phil was there, and I had no idea who Phil was. And we just started chatting a little bit, and then I saw him like 3 or 4 times over that weekend, and we traded numbers. And
maybe a month later, we got together and went skiing for the day. We went and did a day backcountry skiing, and I threw the project at him.
He told me about this trip he was putting together, and he thought I'd be a great addition. And he told me, like, I'm not a positive, but I think there's 90% chance of this thing happening.
And I told him I was 95% sure it was going to happen, because I was 95% sure it was going to happen. But he thought I meant we had 95% of the funding. And he was all in, but we didn't have a penny. We didn't have a dollar.
It was just this idea, and he had some people on the team, and he was really excited. And honestly, at that point, I was not interested at all in climbing Everest. But he kind of talked about like his 30-year journey in the outdoor industry and how much of a change he thinks that, like, not just climbing the Everest and getting to meet the Sherpa people that he's spent a lot of time with, but how, like, this could potentially make a change in the outdoor industry in the U.S. So he kind of got me on board, and I was psyched and started really basically 100% bought in a couple weeks after that.
By 2020, Phil had formed a team. Eddie, Dina, Fred Campbell, Manoa, Abby Dion, Rosemary Saul, Thomas Moore, Evan Green, Dom Mullins, and Phil's longtime friend and legendary Kenyan climber, James KG Kajabi. The team was diverse in region, climbing backgrounds, and age, but everyone had lived climbing. The passion stood out to Phil, and he brought them together.
Like, Phil's an outdoors person, and he's been, like I said, he's been doing it for a long time. Skiing, climbing, rafting, you know, he's kind of into it all. And I think he's definitely a big idea person. Like, he comes up with these ideas, he sits and he thinks about things a lot, and he's also really great with forming relationships with people. And so I think that's how he brought this whole team together, is, you know, he's met people over who knows how long, to be honest, and he's formed really good, meaningful relationships with everyone on the team. And so I think that's where his strengths are, is coming up with big ideas and forming great relationships.
So at what point did the trip actually come together? So you have the team, you have the objective, you know, everybody's ready. Like, how did you actually make it happen? And, you know, talk about the process of getting everybody there and doing the thing.
Ooh, that's that's a lot of different pieces. Because, I mean, there's the coming together, and there's the fundraising, and there's the logistical planning, and there's this little thing that called COVID that shows up in the middle of all this. And so, yeah, I mean, there are just a lot of different stories in there.
I'd kind of forgotten about COVID. How did, I mean, were you guys planning to go the year that you did, or were you aspiring to the year before? Because, I mean, the borders were closed for a while. I mean, yeah, so what all happened?
Ooh, I think we actually aspired to do that 2 years before we actually did. So the first thing for me, it's about building community and team building, right? So we did a trip to Highlight Canyon, actually. And that would have been, gosh, January of 2020.
Yeah, January of 2020. So, yeah.
We all went to Highlight Canyon, a shakedown trip. We had a good time. It was lovely. We climbed and did whatever little skiing we could, did some hiking around and so on. And it was like a, hey, raise your hand, you know, kind of feel each other out and whatnot, and raise your hand if you're in. And I knew from that trip, like, what that team looked like. Then the pandemic hit. That would have been March 2020 when the pandemic came and everything stopped.
We'll be back with more after the break. I've been a North Face athlete for almost 18 years, which has been incredible, and I've always appreciated their commitment to exploration. Summit Series is the name of the pinnacle North Face products that I use on every expedition, and I love that their tagline is athlete tested and expedition proven. I've personally tested these products all over the world, and they've always proven themselves. Future Fleece is the next generation base layer that I wear almost every day of climbing outside, whether on the wall or at the crag. You can shop the full Summit Series collection at thenorthface.com. I first found Koros when I was looking for a GPS watch that could track my biggest outdoor adventures. I needed something with a massive battery life that was also robust enough to handle the climbing. As it turns out, Koros is the only GPS watch brand that has done some serious development for climbers, from multi-bitch GPS tracking to indoor programmed workouts. The watches have a mind-blowing battery life. The Vertex watch series lasts for more than 100 hours in GPS activities, so I only need to charge it once every several weeks. I only need to charge my watch so sporadically that I can never find the charger because I haven't used it in 6 weeks. If you're interested in bringing new technology into your climbing training and tracking, you should consider their new Vertex 2S. Go to Koros.com and use the code CLIMBINGGOLD to secure a free watch carabiner
with the purchase of your new Vertex 2S.
So, I mean, I'm like, so then what happened? So you guys had to push the trip for two seasons. Everest was closed. You know, I mean, how did you guys maintain morale and like maintain momentum for the whole trip? And like how to find funding when you're not even sure if the mountain will be open?
We kept going, but it wasn't easy. You know, from March to October, I mean, I had been furloughed from work. I was working at Osprey at the time I was furloughed. And for me, I started asking the question, like, why am I even doing this? You know, my daughter was in and out of school. I have a daughter who's 15, she just turned 15. So she would have been 12, 13 at the time. In and out of school. I'm at home, you know, all this stuff. I'm like, why are we doing this? People around the world are suffering. And we're asking for money to go climb a mountain. That doesn't make sense to me. But I said, but there's a reason for it. Keep moving. I talked to a friend of mine about it. It was like, what's the worst can happen? We were, I think, pretty deep in with funding from some folks. We're like, hey, you know, North Face was our title sponsor. We had to ask, what if this can't happen? Can we push it to another year? And so we're having those conversations.
At this point, we're like meeting on Zoom weekly and we're talking and having all this time together, which I think actually was really good for the team. You know, sort of in retrospect, it's like all these roadblocks that we were able to overcome before we even like got some boots on the ground really was a lot of team building and just real life grit getting through it. And we just kept having these conversations about, well, there's things in your control and there's things out of your control. And we'll just deal with things as they come up. Let's just keep.
Global pandemic is definitely on the out of your control sort of. You're like, oh man, we trained, we prepped, we're ready. And then the entire world shut down. You're like, huh, that's a tough one to work around.
That's the thing is it's like, as far as like taking obligation on yourself when people give you support, it's like, well, you know, let's support each other and do what we can. But like the support doesn't come with like, you know, a magic, like make the world start again button or anything. So we'll just work with it and see where it goes.
The pandemic unfolded. Then the vaccine came. And with it, the prospect of international travel sat on the horizon. In March of 2021, the Nepali government announced that it would reopen the mountain. Eddie, like, did it feel stressful or was there pressure?
I didn't really feel that much pressure other than the pressure to make it happen. I mean, I told you a story where like feels like I'm sure it's going to happen. And then I joined the first meeting and they're like, well, we have no money in the bank. How are we going to make this thing happen? And then, you know, so once we started going down that road and I committed to it, it's like, I wanted this to happen. And I felt like there was a little bit of pressure, especially when random people kind of let it slip that this trip was happening. And then we made an announcement. And I think at the time we made the announcement, we only had like $25,000 and the trip cost way more than that. So I kind of felt like pressure that when people started hearing about this and wanting to see this happen, that we could like actually fundraise the money to make it happen. Because honestly, once we got to the mountain and I think how skilled everyone was in the team, it was more about just like finishing the goal because I feel like we prepared well and we were ready to do it.
The team had to turn to the community. So in August of 2021, they launched a GoFundMe. They'd eventually meet their goal of $180,000. Still, a lot was in flux. A lot was up in the air.
When the expedition finally turned the page from planning and theoretical and, you know, aspirational to like actually being on the ground doing the thing, how'd that feel for you to finally be in the Himalaya and like start the process?
It was amazing. So I think when you're doing the planning and the aspirational part, it feels like work sometimes. And it's like, even though it's with a great team and a bunch of great people, it's like all the little fits and starts sort of feel like work. And once you put your boots on the ground and are in it, it's the momentum supernatural. And especially with a team like this, where it's like we'd already had all this great time to form and it's a bunch of great human beings and really competent and skilled and good at solving problems and good at being and good at supporting each other, that like, you know, it's like, okay, cool, we're rolling, we're here. And it just got super fun.
So Adina, though, had you ever been to the Himalaya or had you you know, had you wanted to climb Everest before? Like, had it been on your radar?
So one of my full circle moments with this whole trip is that I had been to the Himalaya as a child. So when I was 6 years old, my dad was working in India, and one of his friends had organized an Everest Base Camp trek. And since our family was already pretty close in the neighborhood, we were lucky enough to be able to go. Like, that's probably not something we would have been able to do if we'd been in the States as usual. And my parents, being the outdoorsy parents that they are, were like, all right, we got like a 6 and an 8 year old, and a buddy just invited us to go to Everest Base Camp. Let's do it as a family trip. And so,
Can you remember that?
I'd been back to India, but I hadn't been back to Nepal until we went for the expedition. And it was amazing to me how like viscerally familiar the smell of a yak dung fire was. And I mean, I do have some specific memories from being 6 and 7 years old, just because we'd like picked up some stomach bug in Kathmandu, and I was in pretty rough shape most of the time, and then had trouble with the altitude. And so from Gorakshet, my dad and I went back down to Lobuche, and then while we were hanging out there waiting for the rest of our crew to catch up, like, I just started playing with the local kids. And so like my most vivid memories of that are actually like me and this other kid, like playing in the mud together. We were like building little dams to like direct the meltwater and stuff, and you know, kid stuff. So that's the most specific memory I have, I guess.
Yeah. That is full circle. I'm like, wow, you were there as a kid.
Did you have a reaction like the first time you saw Everest in person, like as you made the trek towards base camp?
Well, it's interesting. We went on 2 trips last year. We went and worked at the climbing school in the winter, and it was really cool. And it was cool to like spend a lot of time with the Sherpa people that Phil had already known, and they met us at the airport. And it was like these huge mountain ranges. There wasn't very many people around, and there was this huge, you were seeing all these huge ice flows all around. And I was like, man, this actually like gets me excited about like ice climbing and doing this type of stuff. But kind of when we came back for the Everest season, it was kind of a different story in a way. Like, it was really crowded. There were so many people on vacation to just hike to one of the villages or hike to Everest Base Camp. And like, it definitely had a much different, it's kind of like Yosemite Valley in the summer, where it's just like people all over the place. You know, as we flew into the Khumbu Valley and we started hiking up and trekking up and seeing all these other groups, that part was a little overwhelming and just a lot less peaceful than what we had in the winter when absolutely no one was here.
The team made the trek to base camp. The crew developed strong bonds with the Sherpa team, who would climb alongside them and document the journey. It also became clear to Phil that there was a lot going on and that leadership might require something beyond leading a summit push.
So I made the decision. All along, I was planning to climb. I was planning to be on the summit team. But it became clear, like during the expedition, just with logistics and having been there before with the plus ones that were hiking in us with the large team that we hiked, which was took some managing as well. We had folks coming into base camp. We met people all along, like, wow, is the full circle Everest team? Oh, man, I've been following you guys. Like, throughout, from Kathmandu to, you know, I mean, we went to the U.S. Embassy. We had a press day there. We met with the Nepali Youth Council in Kathmandu, had a day with them there. So honestly, for me, it was exhausting, and I was still working. By the time we got to base camp, I realized that with logistics, plus ones, and other things that were happening, my best role for this expedition was to not climb and to focus on everything else, to take as much as I could off of the other climbers. So that gave us the biggest chance for success in that sense. So I decided not to climb, which was hard, but I still went to, let's see, how many times did I go to Pumori Camp 1? Probably 3 or 4, maybe 4 times. But every time a team went on a rotation, they went through the ice fall, I got up, I went to Crampon Point, I came back to camp. So I did a fair amount of moving around in the ice fall and
Yeah, so you did a ton of trekking, but with no intention of summiting the mountain.
Most everyone remembers things going about as smoothly as could be expected. The team went through the process of acclimatizing, slowly making their way up and down the mountain until their bodies were ready to make the final push into the fabled death zone. An Everest summit window is ridiculously tight, with only a few good days really opening up during the month of May. May 12th would be their day.
Yeah, so summit day was kind of interesting. So we got to Camp 4 pretty early in the day, and our head Sherpa Panuru came. We all chatted, and we had a plan where half our team would leave for the summit at 8 p.m., the other half of the team would leave at 9 p.m. But it's really weird. When you get to Camp 4, even if your phone's in airplane mode or your watch or whatever, it all changes to Chinese time. So the times got all out of whack. And so I woke up at like 8 o'clock, all ready to go, because I was going on the 9 o'clock train, and everyone was gone.
You know, I didn't sleep well. I had moved myself from my personal tent into the comms tent, and I slept with the radio, and I was afraid to just fall asleep because I didn't want to sleep through the radio call. I didn't know what would happen.
When our head Sherpa, who was staying down there, came up to me and was like, "Hey, look, there's all these people up on the mountain. You got to get ready." And I kind of was like, "What?" Like, we're on oxygen at the time. It's just, you know, everything's a little bit harder up there. And I just really wasn't ready to go yet. But literally the whole team was gone. Most people from Camp 4 were gone. And it was the first good summit day of the year. It does make that day a little bit more crowded. But I just kind of got ready, got my snacks. I don't even remember what I had anymore. Got my like 1 liter of water, and then just started trudging up. And it really wasn't that big of a problem because I kind of got to the front of the queue within the first like hour and a half of leaving the tent. And basically, besides Manoa, who was on our team, who left the 2 hours early, didn't see anyone else the entire time.
And it was like, gosh, it was not even 2 o'clock in the morning, because like we knew the team was leaving
at eight o'clock
at night for a sunrise summit, and it was like not even 2 a.m. We're like, and you could hear the radio call come in. And we were just like, yep, that's Manoa on top. He's gonna be back down at Camp 4 like before breakfast.
We got to the front of the queue right before the balcony, switched out my oxygen tank. I was climbing with Sherpa Pasong. Yeah, we didn't see anyone until we saw Manoa at the Hillary Step, and him and the Sherpa he went up with were coming down, and they were just psyched. And I was psyched, and I wasn't wearing glasses because it was the middle of the night. So like his Sherpa walks up to me and just like rubs these frozen icicles off my eyes, which really hurt, which that's like the one thing I remember. And then I got up to the summit. Pasong was like, "Hey, if we can get back off the south summit and hopefully down the ridge before the queue catches up, we're gonna have the best day ever." And so we just hustled down and didn't use any of our extra oxygen tanks or switch out or anything, and went all the way back down to Camp 4 and then back down to Camp 2. So it was really cool.
When folks were on their summit rotation and we were listening to the radios back at base camp and getting updates, like that's one moment where I can think of where it was like there's something like really specific that was like, oh, this is exciting, but also an emotional roller coaster because, you know, people are still up in the death zone, and until we know that everyone's back, it's high anxiety. But then hearing like people successfully getting to the summit was really cool.
My job at that point was to relay messages to significant others. So Manoa, when I knew that he had summited and came down, then I called and I texted his wife. And then when Eddie summited came down, then I woke up and I texted his wife, and I just kept relaying those messages and so on.
How fun was that to be the bearer of good news? You know, to be texting everybody.
Awesome. Like, oh, yeah. It was so good. Yeah, it was so fun to just be like positive every single time. Yeah.
All in all, Manoa, Eddie, Rosemary, KG, Dom, Evan, and Thomas made it to the summit.
We'll be back with more after the break. Element is a zero sugar electrolyte drink mix formulated with a science-backed ratio of sodium to potassium to magnesium. Each packet delivers a meaningful dose of electrolytes, free of sugar, artificial colors, or other dodgy ingredients. It tastes great, and I've used it extensively on expeditions. Element is formulated for anyone looking to restore health through hydration, and is perfectly suited for athletes, folks who are fasting,
or those following keto, low carb, whole food, or paleo diets. Try Element totally risk-free. If you don't like it, they'll refund your order, no questions asked. So whether you're new or returning Element customer, you can get a free Element sample pack with any drink mix order when you go to drinkelement.com/climbinggold. That's drinkelement.com/climbinggold. Dr. Squatch crafts natural, high-performance personal care products with no harmful ingredients. I don't shower often, but when I do, I use Dr. Squatch. I especially like the Wood Barrel Bourbon Bar Soap. From soap to shampoo to conditioner, they help me look, feel, and smell my best for whatever adventure I choose. They're offering new customers 20% off any purchase with the code CLIMBINGGOLD. Or you can go to drsquatch.com/Honnold. Dr. Squatch. Get dirty. Stay clean. So when you guys finally, when the whole team reunited in camp, how did you guys celebrate?
Big dance party.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
There was a private Sherpa party that most people didn't know about. That was pretty good. Yeah.
You said a private what party?
Sherpa party. All the Sherpas got together in their tent.
Mm.
And I know I have some videos and some photos around, but they were drinking Kukri rum. They were just happy, but I think it wasn't like woohoo kind of. They were definitely celebrating, but I think it was like everybody was down, you know, and they sat and they drank beer and rum, and then we had the dance party in the night. Yeah, later on that evening. Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, how did it feel? I mean, you're like, oh, after years of planning and years of uncertainty, the whole trip actually came together like it happened. I mean, after freaking 6-7 weeks on the mountain, were you just like, you know, is everybody just relieved to be done and able to go home? Or, you know, like talk about the satisfaction in seeing through such a long, long process.
I mean, for me, it was definitely very satisfying, right? That everybody was down. We had been successful, but not just, again, the summit. It was really looking at the whole process of 3 years of planning with a year of, you know, a pandemic year in there, and then not kind of letting it go a little bit, but picking it back up again and kind of staying, just holding fast and staying the course with that. And then the people, it was the connections of all the people who had given $5 even on the GoFundMe, the kids who had, you know, drawn pictures and sent them to us, and we had them in our, you know, in our kitchen tent. It was all of those things to me wound up in that we're successful and everybody's going home. It was sweet.
So the stated goal for Full Circle Everest was to inspire the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts, educators, leaders, and mountaineers of color to continue chasing their personal summits. A year later, do you feel like that's worked? And certainly in the aftermath of the climb, did you guys feel like that happened?
I mean, in that sense, it's still happening. We're, especially with the role that I was playing in the expedition, it's like almost we get back and now we're sharing and we're storytelling and, you know, we're doing all these other things towards that initial goal. And so in a way, sort of we're still in the expedition, we're in a different phase of it, of seeing that through, and that's been awesome. Like, we're doing it right now, we're talking with you, but you know, we've been going around doing TV stuff, doing events. It's been really cool just meeting with all kinds of people, and especially when we get chances to sit down and have a longer conversation, like, you know, things about being a person of color in the outdoors and experiencing things different ways. Like, there's just like a lot of really nuanced feelings about it. And our team comes from a really diverse background as far as how we got to the outdoors and what our personal stories are. So being able to go to festivals and meetings and like town hall-y feeling events and sharing that and talking with folks has been a really, really cool part of the whole trip.
The team won the award, the Climb of the Year award for the AAC. And that was really cool to see that many people thought like a not cutting edge climb was really important to them to vote for it. So I thought that was awesome. But I think it's going to take a little bit longer to see like a trickle down effect. And I don't think it's just like our expedition, that's the one that's going to make the difference. Like, I think our expedition was just a piece of many other things. I know like North Face is doing their Minty program. Scarpa was doing a program like that. There's all sorts of other organizations out there trying to get people outside. And I think it's a combination of those pieces that is going to start making a difference in hitting our goal. And I think that, like, I mean, this is just one thing where you just see climbing at like a very high stage in terms of a general public perception, right? Everest isn't like the hardest single climb, but it's also something that everyone knows about. Like, I think it's going to take a few more years to see if, you know, you start looking in the demographics when you're hiking a 14er looks a little bit different, or it's at least in line with the demographics of Colorado, or the demographics when you're in the climbing gym in line with the places that the gyms are. I think that's going to take a few years for that to really know if we're successful or not. I think like one thing that was really important with our trip, and like I always just like to highlight, is our Sherpa team. And like, yeah, we keep saying it was the first all black expedition, but we had Sherpas on our team. We also had this guy, Amrit, who was a Nepali. He's actually in charge of the Khumbu Climbing School, and that was his first summit of Everest. And he was like on our team, you know, he was one of the team members. I think we all viewed the Sherpas as team members. And I think that's one thing that gets lost a lot when people talk about Everest, and then like climbers and rock climbers talk about Everest and the Sherpas, maybe in a negative light. It's just like, you know, we viewed them as team members. And actually one of our head Sherpa, Panuru, I knew before the expedition because he works at Sherpa House in Golden, Colorado, like 30 minutes from my house in the off season, because he can make more money washing dishes in Golden, Colorado than he can living in Nepal, other than those couple weeks of Everest. So like one of our big things, I think, in the trip was to really support those people and treat them as team members and, you know, try to help the people who live there as much as possible.
Yes, summiting was a big goal. Yes, we wanted people to summit. The connection between communities and exposing people to the Sherpa community and making that connection so that we have more people in the Black community around the world that can actually talk about the Sherpa culture and the experience of Everest from experience, not just from what they read in a magazine or see on television. And then you put summit on top of that and the expedition itself, that was all icing on the cake. So to me, we hit all of those goals. And that to me is what spells success. It wasn't just the summits itself. Yeah.
From your perspective, what special power does Everest hold over sort of the broader public, our collective imaginations? Why does it still matter so much? Not just to you, but to everyone.
It's the top of the world. It's a point that everyone can kind of think about, but most people can't touch it. Everest is an icon. And I think I said this going into it. It's like, you know, an example, we have all been on other 6,000 meter peaks. Denali, Aconcagua, Kilimanjaro is not 6,000 meters, but you know, we've been climbing. Nobody pays attention to that stuff. Expedition Denali is the closest one, you know, that our society kind of knows about. But you throw Everest in there, everybody's paying attention to it. And then you add social media to that, everybody's paying attention to it. That's what Everest is. It's always been a dream of certain people. Now everybody can see that dream and they're like, oh. And then you throw the 11 Black people going to climb Mount Everest. And like Alex mentioned before, if people can't see this, they've never seen that before. That made it even harder for us, actually, because it was 11 Black people going to climb Everest, which Black people don't do. They don't climb. They don't ski. They don't do this outdoor stuff. Coming out of a pandemic, our society was paying attention to that. But the biggest reason, I think, because again, it's Everest is an icon, but you take that icon and then you add a whole globe of people who are going through a life-changing experience, they're paying attention to it. And that's just what it was to me. That really got not only our society, but again, I look way past it. I'm always looking globally. And it's like it got people from all over the globe to pay attention to something that was for everybody. It's like positive. Someone asked me this question a couple of days ago. It was like, was there any kind of negative things? Oh, yeah, there was a lot. There was a lot of negative comments via social media and so on about why, or, you know, reverse racism, all these different things. I never paid any attention to it. But for the most part, people were looking for something coming out of this life-changing experience that was positive. And Everest just happened to be that iconic catch. If that had been Denali, nobody would pay attention to it because it had been done. You know, it was done. Not many people paid attention to that. It was K2, maybe something, but it was Everest. In the past, history of Black and brown people have not been told. It's kind of been hidden. And there are some, I mean, I can take you to my bookshelf right here and give you four or five books that are, you know, on the Black West or Black First, which are people who, or Black people who have done things as the first Black person to do it or the first person to do it in general. But those stories have, for the most part, always been hidden from our society. We don't learn it in school. You know, they're not in the forefront. And so we kind of came around in a time where social media doesn't allow that to happen anymore, right? It's like it's in perpetuity. You go to the internet and get Full Circle Expedition, you see a team of, you know, Black people in Sherpas climbing Mount Everest. Like that doesn't go away. A lot of these other things, we have to dig for it, right? And then when we dig for it, people ask, well, why does it even matter? Why should we teach that in school? Why should we teach that in general, right? People have not been paying attention to Everest from the Black and brown community, not like they do now. And so right now in the outdoor industry, what you're having is people saying, hey, I want to know about those folks, including folks like yourself, because they're interesting. And that's what brings so much richness to this community that for the most part has been very homogenous.
Thanks, Phil, Adina, and Eddie for sharing your story and perspective with us. Look for a feature-length film about their ascent later this year. Climbing Gold is a production of Duct Tape Then Beer. Alex Honnold is our host. Today's episode was produced and edited by Marco Seiler-Gonzalez and me, Fitzcahal. Evan Phillips mixed and mastered and provided additional editing. Music today by Joya Faring, Cloud Cord, and Brendan O'Connell. Tracks are courtesy of Track Club or the artists themselves. Our producer is Lauren Delaney Miller. Our executive producers are Ben Endy and Jonathan Redzik for RXR Sports, and Lisi Hendricks and Becca Call for Duct Tape Them Beer. Thanks for listening. We'll be back in the fall with a whole new season of Climbing Gold.